A report into maritime safety in Tory Channel suggests Kiwi Rail's proposed bigger inter-island ferries may carry a heightened risk of grounding and collision that could result in catastrophic loss of life or an oil spill. Kiwi Rail plans to have two new ships in operation by 2024, which would be nearly 40 metres longer and at least 5 metres wider than the current ships. The Marlborough District Council commissioned an assessment of navigational safety and risk in Tory Channel, the narrow waterway used by ferry operators between Wellington and Picton. That report, released to 9 to noon under the Official Information Act, identifies 67 risks, including grounding, collision, limited tug availability, and the need for better aids to navigation. The risks are pre-existing, but the report says the introduction of new, larger ferries with new handling characteristics and greater capacity for passengers and crew brings new challenges. The report by Master Mariner Mike Pearson and Master Mariner and Maritime and Air Accident Investigator Tim Burfoot says the new ferries should not be permitted to use Tory Channel until they have practically proven that steering, propulsion and position-keeping capabilities are uncompromised. However, Kiwi Rail's own risk report by Thompson Clark Shipping finds there is no additional risk in Tory Channel associated with larger ferries. It says it fully supports the collaborative approach. Kiwi Rail says it fully supports the collaborative approach to the risk management process that's required by the Port and Harbour Marine Safety Code, and that a safety review is now underway, being led by the Harbour Master. In a statement in lieu of an interview this morning, Kiwi Rail says it is confident the systems on its new ferries will allow the Inter-Islander to operate safely and in accordance with any new operating parameters put in place by the safety review. Were the Inter-Islander ferries not permitted to use the Tory Channel entrance to the Sounds, it would add another 30 minutes to the sailing time, and Kiwi Rail's own report suggests might bring into question its business case for the new ferries. The Marlborough Harbour Master, Luke Grogan, is leading a risk assessment group considering the issues. He says a change to navigational bylaws could be on the cards, including making ferry traffic through Tory Channel one way only. Luke Grogan is with us first. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
So who makes decisions about which vessels can use the Tory Channel, who can operate and how? Is that you?
Yes, essentially it is. That's one of the primary roles and functions of a harbour master. In this role, there's extensive powers made available under the Maritime Transport Act. Specifically Part 33F, and that enables a harbour master to make directions. So directions are mechanisms that would enable me to, for example, prevent a ship from accessing Tory Channel. And that's something that we have done in the past, and we do that when we think there's a need to. If we're not confident that the safety processes and procedures that need to be there are in place.
It happens sometimes because of weather conditions. Does it also happen with cruise ships currently, the big cruise ships? Do they have to use the northern entrance?
They do currently. So a number of years ago, 2016, we had a grounding of a cruise ship, the Azamara Quest. That was a 180-metre cruise ship. It was on its maiden voyage to Picton, came through the Tory Channel and grounded on Fecky Rock. And so since that time, yes, all cruise ship transits have been through the northern entrance. And that's simply been because myself as harbour master, but along with others as well, Maritime New Zealand and the Port of Marlborough and the pilots of the region, have essentially decided that the risk of bringing cruise ships through Tory Channel just isn't justified. And so we use the northern entrance.
Why did you commission this report? Was it related to your concerns about Kiwi Rail's proposed new ferries?
So certainly the proposed new ferries do represent something of a step change. These are larger ferries, jumping up 25% in size, essentially, so up to 220, 230 metres in length. You'd only have to go back 15, 20 years, and the largest ferries on the Cook Strait were more like 120 to 150 metres. So we are seeing this increase in the size of tonnage coming through the channel and the region over time. And so absolutely, as that risk changes, as the size of vessels increases, we do need to look closely at it. But on top of that, we had, as I said earlier, the grounding of a cruise ship, which was a really significant event. It caused us to look very closely at Tory Channel and all the risks that exist in terms of navigating a large ship through that space. And by large ship, I mean anything over what we call 500 gross tonnes. So that's something that is required to carry a pilot. And that's all existing ferries fall into that category, all cruise ships and you know, essentially vessels that people would commonly think of as ships. So it's been a real process to really look at Tory Channel and attempt to unpick and understand existing risks, but also future risks.
What are your specific concerns, though, about this, these proposed new ships? I want to talk about pre-existing risk in a moment, which Kiwi Rail draws a great deal of attention to, and which the report you commissioned refers to in greatest detail, risks that are already there. But what is your particular concern about the proposed new vessels?
So I guess to put it really simply, bigger the ship, more risk. And there's some pretty clear reasons why I make that statement. So we see that salvage costs, for example, are going up. That doesn't necessarily mean that salvage events are occurring more frequently, but there's a higher cost or impact when these kind of events go wrong or occur. The tolerance for catastrophic shipping events, whether it's pollution like the Rena or incidents like Costa Concordia, I think these days society just really expects a level of safety that puts people and the environment, you know, as the highest priority. So what we can say is the bigger the ship, the more mess, the more cost to clean up, the less tolerance there is for those kind of events. And essentially, that's speaking to a higher consequence with a larger ship, higher consequence. And that is essentially, that's the basic summary. The bigger the ship, the bigger the mess, so more risk.
So it's less that there is a greater risk of an incident involving a bigger ferry in Tory Channel than the consequences being that much greater.
Yeah, that would be a fair statement. So there is actually some work that suggests that if you look globally at shipping incidents, you can see that in some cases or that there is a trend that actually the larger ships sustain less incidents than smaller ships. That's not completely clear, and it may not be entirely applicable to the local context here. But absolutely, the factor here is consequence. So when we consider risk to be an equation where we look at the likelihood and the consequence of an event, we might say that the likelihood of an event is fairly constant. One could argue that modern technologies could even reduce the likelihood of an event. But nonetheless, we have a higher consequence with bigger ships. And so that brings into question whether or not the risk that these new ships pose is greater than what currently exists. And quantifying that is a challenge.
What the report, your own report, is blunt on is the reality of the current risks of grounding and collision or elision, which is where a ship hits a rock or something, what the consequences would be. And that makes very bleak reading. It makes bleak on there being sufficient rescue response, sufficient ability to get people off ships, particularly cruise ships. Suggests it's highly unlikely that what's proposed as an evacuation plan for a cruise ship would happen. It points to the fact that the sheer number of people involved would see an emergency response stretched at the very least. I mean, what is the current situation, Luke?
Yeah, so the current situation, going back to my my point at the start of the discussion, so the Hubmaster does have the power to prevent the transits of any vessels through the region if necessary to ensure maritime safety. So at this point in time, whilst I acknowledge everything in the report and I think it's extremely useful and valid, it's important to note that there is no intention or need perceived to immediately prevent or constrain existing operations. So what we're doing with this report is really encouraging a level of openness and honest discussion about risk. We know, going back to basic principles, that when you invent the ship, you invent the shipwreck. So we have no interest in attempting to deny or hide risk. It's quite the opposite. There are weaknesses in all systems, but it's just a case of understanding what those weaknesses are and making those improvements over time so that we can be sure that we've exercised our duty of care to ensure safe shipping in the region. And acknowledging the risk and understanding the risk is an absolutely critical part of that process. And on top of that, I think we're really advancing in terms of the methods that we can use to understand risk and the technology that we have available to enable us to really analyse and unpack these concerns. Don't get me wrong, though, there's a huge amount of work being done and a huge amount of work that needs to continue to be done to make sure that the journey between Wellington and Picton, and specifically in this case through the Marlborough Sounds, continues to be a safe one.
So what you're saying is, at this point, you don't want increased risk not of an event, but risk of what that event would result in by numbers of people involved, by size of vessel involved. There's some specific matters I want to touch on. For example, the capacity of the tugs to assist in manoeuvring vessels that lose power. Is this another question mark you have over the proposed new vessels?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when you look at the existing tonnage in the port and also what's available in neighbouring ports, so if we look to Wellington or Taranaki, we can see that there are some challenges. So if we did have a major event and we needed to mobilise tug resources, existing tug capacity effectively wouldn't cut it in a number of scenarios. And so that is absolutely a factor that we need to work through. And we are working through it at the moment. There's a program of work underway to identify what those tug needs are for the port locally, but also as we work through closer analysis of what a mass rescue operation might look like and what the factors that go into that are, then absolutely that work and those work streams will determine what we need, where the gaps are, and how we can fill those gaps to end up with a system that can't completely remove the risk, but can at least give us confidence that we've exercised due diligence toward managing that risk as best as we can.
Kiwi Rail's report, done by Thompson Clark Shipping, argues that the report you've done indicates no additional risk due to these new ferries. It's a bit of a stretch of the interpretation, because what it says is you need to satisfy yourself there's no additional risk to these ferries before letting them sail there. So it's a bit of a leap. However, it does not make any specific additional or add to any specific additional risks at this stage, other than pointing out you need to satisfy yourself that ferries, particularly new ferries, that in their first year can have operating issues or things could be a bit different or people are learning to sail them essentially. That you need to be satisfied there is no compromise by the introduction of a new ferry. It also raises another matter that Kiwi Rail raises, which is the question of piloting and pilotage. And you just said this. It applies to ships above a certain size. But there appears to be a real issue flagged in both reports with having sufficient trained and being able to maintain sufficient trained pilots for this route. And I understand there's an exemption system involved. Could you explain a bit more?
Yeah, sure. So there's two things. First off, around New Zealand, you'll find pilotage regions, and these are regions where, under the Act, it's a requirement for ships to have a pilot, which is a person trained in the inshore navigation of ships, so taking the ship from open water to the berth. And that person boards the ship and brings it safely into the port. They have the local knowledge, the expertise, and the understanding of the local procedures, etc. And then in certain circumstances, so for example, the ferries, You have ships coming and going frequently, and so there's recognition that the master on those ships has sufficient opportunity to train up to enable them to develop the skills that they need. And so they then are issued a pilot exemption certificate, and that's issued by Maritime New Zealand, who's the national pilotage regulator. And thereby that essentially says, okay, that person, that master, can bring the ship in, and they don't need to have a pilot on board. Now, the two systems are closely related. So the training of a master who wants to be exempt from the carriage of a pilot is expected to go through a comprehensive training plan, and part of that involves learning from and being assessed by a local pilot. Now, the challenge in Marlborough, which I think is common to many small ports around New Zealand, is that finding persons with the expertise and capability to be pilots, and then also maintaining the standards of training proficiency that are required, can be difficult. So at the moment, we in Marlborough have one pilot qualified for the Tory Channel. And obviously with just one person, that does pose challenges, particularly when there's a large number of persons working for both the existing ferry companies that need to obtain piloted exemption certification.
What the KiwiRail report says, quite bluntly, is there's a risk to Inter-Islander that the Marlborough District Council, in seeking in part to eliminate the risks associated with the, quote, failing pilotage training and proficiency process, will take drastic action, for example, prohibiting larger vessels from transiting the Tory Channel. Is that the reason you have concerns or not?
The thing is that we will take whatever action is necessary to ensure navigation safety, and that can be done under Harbourmaster's direction, or it can be done through the introduction of bylaws. But the fact is that at the moment it's not clear exactly what controls need to be put in place to ensure the safe transit of ships through Tory Channel. It may be that some of those controls do impact timetabling and scheduling, but to what extent remains unclear. What's positive in this process is that I think all parties are committed to the same outcome, which is, you know, to enable the continued safe navigation of ships through the region and to strengthen that critical transport link between the North and South Island.
What I hear from you is that this latest proposed introduction of new ferries is just a step too far, in your view. And while size itself may not be the specific risk factor, and that's what KiwiRail argues, the consequences of a low incident event, a low probability event, have crossed a line for you. And that risk is higher with the Tory Channel situation than the northern entrance. Does that sum it up?
I think it would be fair to say that I wouldn't say we've crossed the line, but I definitely think we're at the point where we need to be really careful to ensure that we haven't crossed the line. And that's really the process that's going on at the moment, to explore exactly where that line is, to quantify that risk, and to make sure that whatever decisions are made around access to Tory Channel are extremely robust and stand up to scrutiny. That's what must happen.
What your report, commissioned report, also pointed out was the pre-existing risks to Tory Channel ought to cause a rethink in their own right. And it makes the point that when ferries find themselves one exiting, one incoming in that channel, they have their own systems for dealing with that. It's ideally not going to happen, but, you know, they communicate, one will slow, and they have their own systems for navigating a situation where they're going to pass. And the report makes the point that even now, it means that they tend to travel a little closer to land than would be ideal if this were one-way traffic. They'd be out in the centre of the channel. And it's suggesting that already there should be thought given to making Tory Channel one-way, which means one part of every return trip would use the northern entrance. Are you giving active thought to that as well?
Yeah, we are. At the moment, we're open to all options as we go through this process of assessing what a safe passage plan between Wellington and Picton should look like. And so that's part of it. There's a number of options. So one way is one of them. It's potentially, you could argue that's an extreme one. But also extending the controlled navigation zones, the critical navigation zones at the Tory Channel entrance and also at the confluence with Totoranui, Queen Charlotte Sound, is important too. There's a notion that we need to ensure that if vessels do pass, for example, in Tory Channel, that it's only at specific points in the channel. And achieving controls like that does require a certain amount of control of the ships in terms of where they are at what specific times. And again, those things can impact on scheduling and timetabling. So that's a big piece of work that we need to work through.
Were you taken by surprise by Kiwi Rail's announcement it was in the procurement for these new ships? And did it seek your advice before proceeding?
Yeah, so some years ago we spent some time working on the concept. So that's the notion of running simulated exercises to assess what was possible in terms of new ships and sizes. And there was some great work done by a company called MLA in Australia. And they were able to show that larger ships can transit following the same parameters, if you like, or the same corridor as existing ships. And so that was, to an extent, a proof of concept that it was possible to bring large new ships through in terms of their manoeuvring capability and seakeeping characteristics. The challenge, though, is around the procedures and processes and the risk management frameworks that are in place. So the human factors and the systems and the way those systems integrate is really what's important here. And that is work that's going to have to continue right up to the arrival of the new ships. And in many ways, assessing that and making a final call in terms of access to Tory Channel really is something that will be done over the long term.
Well, who makes that final call? Because Kiwi Rail says it's now in a process with you and all other stakeholders, and we haven't even talked about recreational users and kayakers and others, and we haven't talked about Picton Harbour itself yet. But it says it's now in this collaborative process with you. Its own report intimates were it to be banned from using Tory Channel, the sort of nuclear option, that would bring the business case into question full stop. So will decisions be made in time, or will you be under pressure to find a way for these larger ships to operate through that channel?
So we've committed to this collaborative process, and it really is a case of working through those things. As I said, we do reserve the right to prevent, ships coming through Tory Channel under direction. But actually, my sense of things is that potential for systems to be introduced that could constrain the operation significantly, by working together through this collaborative process, we should be able to provide Kiwi Rail reasonably quickly with a fairly clear understanding of exactly what the regulatory risk that is that they're facing for the project. And then that's really a call for Kiwi Rail as to whether that regulatory risk in terms of what controls may or may not be applied to the navigation of these new ships is something that they want to incur or not.
Are there issues at the berth at Picton itself? Again, small boats, and your report points out recreational boating in the Sounds is only going to increase. Population growth in the district is increasing. There's kayaking. Is there an issue with these ships berthing in Picton Harbour itself that's being assessed?
Oh, look, these ships are a new design that hasn't been used in ferries transiting the region before. The way they approach the berth may change. We've talked already about potentially introducing new tonnage in terms of tugs, a need to review passage plans and procedures. So absolutely, we can certainly expect change in how the ships manoeuvre through Picton Harbour. And of course, the way one user of the harbour operates certainly does overlap and interfere with other users of the harbour. That's how it is in a busy and somewhat congested waterway. But risk management is about considering all of those overlaps and making sure that there is the opportunity for all users of the harbour to be able to do so safely.
Just last month, there were severe winds in Picton, and the current ferries, 40 metres smaller in length, 5 metres narrower in width. Yes, they may have different propulsion systems, and Kiwi Rail is making the point it's got systems on these new ferries that may be advantageous, right? But those smaller ferries couldn't berth at the terminal. Would you have questions around larger ferries?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the wind event that we had in Picton was significant. And once you're talking about those kind of environmental impacts, then realistically, the size of the ship is never going to win against the environment. And also larger ships, you can actually have greater windage and more challenge in manoeuvring them to the berth. So each specific ship, the risk needs to be looked at. There needs to be that close scrutiny of all the processes and procedures around that. And what happens in certain wind events, or what happens in heavy traffic situations, or what happens when there's multiple ships in the channel. So, again, it comes back to a lot of work that needs to be done to ensure that we've got robust systems in place. And then once the new ships arrive, making sure that those systems are implemented. And then beyond that, also monitoring, so that if for any reason those systems start to fall short or fail, then absolutely we can look at what needs to be done to mitigate that. And for a time, it could require the use of the northern entrance. And these things are unclear at the moment, but something that we are working through.
Real-time monitoring, your report recommends constant real-time monitoring, including of things like wake effects. Is it your position that regardless of the inevitable pressure that would come with these ferries to have been delivered, you will not permit them to use Tory Channel until and unless you are satisfied that they can safely do so?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Luke Grogan. You are listening to 9 to Noon on RNZ National. We did ask Kiwi Rail to join the conversation this morning. They declined, but provided us with a statement and with their own report, which I have quoted from already extensively throughout our interview. Listening in also for his perspective is Paul Keating, the chairperson of the residents group Guardians of the Sounds. He's a Master 3000, meaning he can captain a ship that is 3,000 tonnes and runs an ecotourism business. Paul, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, we've traversed this at length with Luke. What's your position on these proposed new ferries, the procurement process Kiwi Rail is in for 2024 delivery, your view on the safety and other issues?
One thing that did come up quite clear is the modelling that was done by MLA Studies in 2016. They pointed out that they couldn't actually bring any vessels through. Well, actually, a vessel did come through around that time that uses exactly the same propulsion system of the proposed new ferries. And it was a very similar length. You might have seen the name of that vessel highlighted in the report from Kiwi Rail. So that was the Azamara Quest in 2016 on the 27th of January. And it had a pilot on board and it managed to hit the rocks. So that does prove that the new propulsion system that they're proposing as an extra safety measure has proven itself to not be up to the current that can get pushed on the boats there. So one of the main problems is with that when you're incoming, there's the current that pushes on to the port side of the boat on an incoming tide. It's very difficult for the ships to counteract those forces. But there needs to be, as Luke said, a lot of robust testing and procedures in place, but it's already been proven once, not on a module, in actual practice, that it doesn't work.
I don't have that report into that grounding in front of me. I don't know what the error or what the cause was found to be. I do have the new system that Kiwi Rail has told me, the propulsion system in both thrusters that it's using, so I can only accept your word on that it is the same system. The ship itself being one potential cause of an accident, there being other possibilities. Who is it that you want to be taking the lead on this, though? And we've heard from the Harbour Master, the buck stops with him, in essence, when it comes to his legal powers. But who else do you want to be reassuring people of the way these new ferries would operate?
Well, ultimately, the government has identified that this is a nationally critical concern for all of us. And we all know the importance of this transport link. But really, Maritime New Zealand has the option to get involved in what's called a safety case. So Fuller's up in Auckland had a safety case, went through with Maritime New Zealand. And at this time, Guardians of the Sounds feel that Maritime New Zealand should assist with a safety case, which will go through the whole process for Inter-Islander. And really any ferries entering and exiting through the channel, so they should get involved.
If the Northern Channel were to be used exclusively, and I think that's your group's position on all ferry sailings, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
It adds 30 or even 40 minutes to a trip that already takes 3.5 hours port to port plus unloading time plus loading on time. Kiwi Rail's own report intimates it would draw into question the business case for the new ferries. It may also have significant impacts for all ferry operators. Is that an issue for you, given, as you said, this is the main transit point for traffic for people and for goods?
Yeah, so there's a few impacts that it would have. One, it would reduce the amount of seasickness on the ferries, and as we know, that is a major problem because they're changing the angle of the course. So you're actually changing angle about 45 degrees, 30 to 45 degrees, when you come past one of the most rough parts of the Cook Strait. So one of the reasons why Kiwis don't even want to get on the ferries because of seasickness. So reducing seasickness is an effect that will happen from using the northern entrance. With the increase in distance, you also have the option now at the design level, because these vessels we're considering to buy haven't actually been built or even finished their design level. So they can be increased in speed. And if you increase your speed out into the Cook Strait, you have no environmental concerns out there. So the biggest problem with, as we know, speed inside the Sounds is the environmental concerns and the erosion and issues it causes. So by increasing your speed out there, you'll probably find that you'll reduce that 30 minutes down to a possible 8 to 10 minutes. And that would completely change the risk value we have currently in place. So you'd probably reduce the risk by about 3 or 4 times. The simple fact being is that Northern Entrance is a lot wider. You can anchor a ship there. So should you have any problems with the vessel, be it through human factors or mechanical, you can put your anchor down and you can get rescued. It's possible in the Northern Entrance. In Tory Channel, it's not possible to put an anchor down. It's just too narrow, too shallow, and any vessel stuck in there would block the entire channel.
Thank you, Paul. Paul Keating, chairperson of the residence group Guardians of the Sounds. I was speaking there earlier to Luke Grogan, who is the harbour master for the Marlborough Sounds. And Kiwi Rail, as I said, issued us a statement that I've referred to at length in the introduction and throughout the interview.